following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening. This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
I feel it too. The 2020 presidential election is heating up. In fact, today, many are feeling the burn because we got the official campaign kickoff announcement from Vermont senator and man who wants to try a few more frozen yogurt flavors before he places his order, Bernie Sanders. Now, Bernie, I'd like to try the lemon again, please. Bernie made his campaign announcement this morning in the most Bernie way possible on Vermont Public Radio. Yeah. Yeah. Electric.
Yeah, electric. Boogie, boogie, yeah. Boogie.
That's a hot booking. After that, he made it official by posting a flyer on his local co-op bulletin board. Now, Sanders finished second out of six in 2016, but this year's field is way larger. The field is also way more diverse this time, with multiple women, people of color, the first openly gay major party presidential candidate. But Sanders, for all that diversity, Bernie Sanders does not believe that hurts his chances.
We have got to look at candidates, not by the color of their skin, not by their sexual orientation or their gender, and not by their age. I mean, I think we have got to try to move us toward a non-discriminatory society which looks at people based on their abilities, based on what they stand for.
Yes, like Dr. King, I have a dream where this diverse nation can come together and be led by an old white guy. Where do I find the courage? Also, where do I find the pudding? I want pudding.
Point is.
Yeah. Point is.
And here's the point.
Yeah.
Bernie's not young.
No.
Which was pointed out on CBS this morning by John Dickerson.
You'll be 79 when you're inaugurated.
Yes.
That's old.
Yes.
By the standards of presidents.
Yes.
Should people be concerned about that?
I think, when we look at people, whether they're old or they're young, you got to look at the totality of the person.
Bernie insists that it doesn't matter if other candidates are more diverse because it's not about him, it's about the people. That's what the tagline on his website is, not me, us. Bold move to do a misdirect in the middle of a slogan. Bernie also feels vindicated because the rest of the Democratic candidates are jumping on his 2016 platform.
All of those ideas, people say, oh, Bernie, they're so radical. They are extremely American. People just won't accept those ideas. Well, you know what's happened over 3 years? All of those ideas and many more are now part of the political mainstream.
So you're saying the party came your way?
Well, I don't want to say
yes.
That. I think
yes.
Most people would say that.
But he's right.
He is right.
The political landscape has changed. The mm-hmm. majority of Democratic candidates this time around have joined his revolution. He's not just Bernie Sanders. He's Gray Guevara. Now.
Okay.
Hey, Gray.
Good look. Very sharp look. Brace yourself. Because in his announcement, Bernie did not have kind words for Donald Trump.
We are running against a president who is a pathological liar.
He is a pathological liar, and it gives me no pleasure to say that.
We have a president who is a pathological liar, and it gives me no pleasure to say that.
Sounds like it gives you some pleasure to say that. I mean, you say it three times. That's getting close to a fetish, I think. And this afternoon, the president weighed in on Bernie's run.
Well, Bernie Sanders is running, yeah, that's right. Personally, I think he missed his time.
Excuse me, sir. Bernie Sanders doesn't have a time. He exists outside of time, like an undated can of beans you find in your pantry.
I don't know about that.
Now, Trump likes Bernie, but it isn't like Bernie's chances.
You got a lot of people running, but only one person's going to win. I hope you know who that person is.
I do. John Oliver. He always wins.
Oh, Stephen Colbert.
Congratulations, buddy.
Yeah. You got to love him. John Oliver. He always wins. By the way, John Oliver, whose new season kicked off Sunday night, was on Colbert's show last week, and apparently that appearance on Colbert's show made him the most frequent guest on that program, ousting Bernie Sanders from that distinction. Bernie Sanders was the most often booked guest on Stephen Colbert's Late Show. So see how it all comes together? Ooh, the stars are in alignment. Actually, the stars were in alignment because Bernie Sanders declared his candidacy at 7:30 yesterday morning on Vermont Public Radio. I guess that's when they simultaneously released the video that we played for you yesterday. And within the first 3 hours alone, he raised more money than any of the other candidates had raised in their first day, most notably Kamala Harris, who had been touted as the front runner because her launch went so well. And she raised, I think it was like $1.5 million in the first 24 hours. Well, Bernie got that in the first 2 or 3 hours. By the time 24 hours had passed, Bernie's take was just shy of $6 million. $6 million. And now the media is all over itself. Should we call Bernie Sanders the front runner? Because, you know, he took in so much money. Should we call him the front runner? And, I've been watching MSNBC on and off throughout the day. And it seems like every show when dealing with Bernie had to have on a naysayer or three. Yeah, you see, they couldn't just have someone on, you know, from Bernie's camp or an actual progressive. Anytime they were talking about Bernie's candidacy, they had to have on a representative or two from Hillary Clinton's campaign. I saw it on a number of shows today. And last night as well. And then just most in the last hour, Katie Tour, who I usually like on MSNBC, she seems to be more progressive than most of them. She did the same thing. She had on some Hillary Clinton person and somebody who calls himself a progressive. Really? They're bending over backwards to diss Bernie Sanders. And frankly, I'm sick of it. Look, I've been saying all along that I'm going to reserve judgment. It's kind of clear that that I am I'm kind of torn. My two favorites in the field as it stands today are Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Why? Because they're the two most progressive of the bunch. Because I look at their policies. I find it a bit disconcerting to go on social media and see people say, well, I kind of like Beto and Tulsi Gabbard. Do you know anything about how they voted? Do you know people who say, I think Biden and Bernie would be great. Really? Then you obviously don't know what either of them stands for. But I find it very comforting that Bernie Sanders did so well out of the box. His launch was went as I guess they'd hoped, taking in just about $6 million in 24 hours is pretty amazing. On the other hand, Elizabeth Warren's launch was not quite as momentous. I was among the group 4 years ago that was really pushing for Elizabeth Warren to get in the race. I always loved Bernie Sanders. I've interviewed him dozens of times over the years, most of those before he ever ran for president. So I've been a follower of his, a fan of his. And I had said right along and had the discussion with him a number of times that that I urged him to run for president, and I urged him, if he was going to run as a Democrat. The reason I gave was because his ideas needed to be heard on that debate stage. Because at the beginning, 4 years ago, although I wanted Bernie Sanders to run, I never thought he stood a chance. For a number of reasons, which we've discussed and will continue to discuss. Elizabeth Warren, on the other hand, I thought stood a really good chance to win. And I wasn't alone. I remember going to Netroots Nation when Hillary Clinton's people were out there with their Ready for Hillary stuff. And then there was things, bumper stickers and hats and posters and all kinds of swag popping up all over the place that said Ready for Warren. And boy, did I grab one of those hats and did I wear it. And then I later found out that those were the work of Adam Green and Stephanie Taylor and the people at the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, who are still, 4 years later, rallying around Elizabeth Warren. I'm thrilled to welcome back to the show. It's been a long time. Adam Green, co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. You find them at boldprogressives.org. Adam's on Twitter at Adam Green. Adam, you there?
Yeah. Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. It's nice to talk to you. It's been a long time.
It has been. Geez, you referenced Netroots during the Obama days. Everything was pure and simple back then.
It was. And I remember, when I wanted one of the Ready for Warren stickers, you said, that'll be $3. All right. So I gave you my $3.
Can I just say something for the record?
Yes.
And people might love or hate us for this, but PCCC just turned 10, Progressive Change Campaign Committee.
Yeah.
And in our first year, we did extensive testing, and we invented the $3 ask in emails.
Did you?
And I just want that to be known. It used to be, can you give $5, $10, or $20?
Right.
Like, you know what? Let's ask for $3. And we knew it went mainstream when Obama used it on his reelection.
Wow.
And then just yesterday, I saw Bernie doing it too. So I just want to let the record reflect.
All right.
You were a pioneer in a $3 ask.
You got it. And I gave it to you that day. And I still have that Ready for Warren sticker somewhere. I remember that so clearly. I remember Elizabeth Warren delivered a keynote address, and we were all wearing our hats, and a lot of us had the Ready for Hillary mugs that they were handing out that we put the Ready for Warren stickers over, not making the Hillary people very happy. That was actually a fun Netroots Nation. It might have been my last one. But Adam, when did you guys decide to drop the support for Elizabeth Warren last time out? When did they make it known to you that she wasn't running? And then what was your decision making going forward? How did you react when that happened?
Okay, so just interesting question. A little tweaking of the historical record here.
Okay.
So we ran the draft Elizabeth Warren for Senate campaign in 2011 and 2012 to urge her to run for Senate.
Right.
And have been very close partners to her ever since. We were not as directly involved in Run Warren Run, in part because we have a very close relationship and we didn't need to publicly urge her to do it. Move On and Democracy for America and Work Families Party, I would say, were way more in the lead on that.
Okay.
But I was definitely in Netroots Nation. I was probably wearing a sticker. I think she projected pretty publicly that she wasn't going to run. And I think Bernie in part decided to run because she was so clear eventually that she wouldn't. Look, he clearly proved the concept that there was an appetite for a really strong progressive in that race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, while if you asked me at the time, I wouldn't have thought it was a smart political move for Warren to run necessarily in her own interests. In retrospect, I think she would have crushed it both in the primary and the general. And, I think Bernie deserves a lot of credit for changing the contours of the debate and putting ideas, working with others to put, big ideas into the mainstream that are now being endorsed by many presidential candidates. So I'm with you. Like, I love the idea of the 1-2 punch of Warren and Sanders leading the pack, driving the entire debate stage in the direction of bold, systemic structural changes that fundamentally take on the current economic and political system in a way that challenges power and sticks up for everyday people. And I anticipate that many other dominoes will fall, in their direction among the other candidates.
Yeah.
And we'll,
I think you're right. And we're seeing it in the platforms, such as they are, the positioning statements that most of the candidates are putting out there. They're borrowing from both Bernie and Elizabeth Warren. And I owe you an apology, Adam Green. I think I was conflating the Progressive Change Campaign Committee with the Ready for Bernie people who grew out of Ready for Warren. There was a lot of activity around that time with activists really getting in the act and trying to push it. So when Elizabeth Warren decided she wasn't running, a lot of those people moved over to People for Bernie. They became People for Bernie, and they're still out there, you know, pushing Bernie Sanders. These are groups that are not affiliated with the campaigns, but are grassroots organizations like yours that are out there raising money, helping promote the ideas and the in your case, the most progressive candidates out there. I can't believe it's been 10 years, although I can, because you guys have been doing amazing work. So you put out an email, the PCCC did, about Bernie announcing yesterday. While touting him, also saying that you guys have endorsed Elizabeth Warren. I got that right, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. So PCCC endorsed Elizabeth Warren, but you're not bad mouthing Bernie Sanders. You still believe in a lot of what he's promoting. Yes.
Is good mouthing a phrase? I don't know.
Yes, you're touting him. You're touting his ideas and his candidacy, right?
That's why. Yes, exactly. I
that's why I get paid the big bucks. Right.
Exactly. That's why you're on radio. And I'm not. So, yes. You know, we just to put our cards on the table. We believe that Elizabeth Warren would be the most electable Democrat against Donald Trump, and would be the best president for America. And happy to go through the logic of that. But we also love Bernie, I actually believe that Elizabeth Warren's candidacy will ultimately be made stronger because Bernie is in the race, not because she needs a push to be progressive, but because, you know, if we have one of our own on the debate stage isolated, that's not good. Others can attack them, or the media can just ignore them. The 1-2 punch of Warren and Sanders on that stage, getting each other's back, sounding similar themes around big, bold structural change, not small board tweaks, creates a critical mass, and I think will command the spotlight that everybody else will want to run into. And if, you know, just let me give you one example of how things can go horribly awry. You mentioned Beto before.
Yes.
Right. But, you know, I think we'd all agree that he was a step up for Democrats in Texas, even though he's not Warren and Sanders on a national level.
Exactly.
You know, we wanted him to win. Right? We wanted him to win that debate, that election. He had a quote-unquote domestic policy debate with Ted Cruz. And the questions that came up in that debate, which he was answering that whole time, had to do with illegal immigration, kneeling during football games, Second Amendment rights, and other wedge issues that for a Republican-leaning audience in Texas just primed them inherent in the conversation to support Cruz. If they were debating, should we cut Social Security benefits or expand them? Should we cut veterans' benefits or expand them? Should we get rid of the Trump tax cuts for the wealthy and allow any student to go to college and graduate without debt? He could be senator today, Beto. But the framing and the issue agenda matters. So again, Warren and Bernie commanding the attention, driving the debate, having everybody speak to their issues as a team, I think is a great example of more is more. They're not cannibalizing each other's support. I think their collective share of the pie will get bigger. And overall, the Democratic Party will leave this cycle, in a much better place.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I think you're right. Again, just as I told Bernie Sanders 5 years ago that I hope he runs as a Democrat because we need his voice on that debate stage. Well, now we've got a plethora of candidates all, you know, espousing a lot of the same ideas. Medicare for all, although they're not all on board to the extent that Bernie and Elizabeth Warren are, most of them are for some form of universal health care. We can point to the outliers instead of saying who does agree. You know, Amy Klobuchar and Sherrod Brown seem to be the two, and Sherrod Brown hasn't announced, even if he will. But they're the ones who are saying, well, maybe not Medicare for all, but some kind of, you know, lowering the age or whatever. That they're all coming around to those positions. So, you know, I've been watching MSNBC on and off today, and every time they mentioned Bernie Sanders, you know, he raised $6 million in the first 24 hours. Is he now the front runner? And then they come back with two anti-Bernie guests because they just have to put their finger on the scale. Somebody also pointed out that Rachel Maddow has had on pretty much all of the candidates a day or a few days after they've declared their candidacy, and the only two that she didn't do that with were Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. How much of a problem is the corporate media's coverage of the horse race part of the election as opposed to covering the issues? How much of a problem is that?
That's a great question. You know, there's a related question of how much of it is intentional and how much of it is just systemic to the corporate media, you know, kind of inherent bias. But I'll tell you some of the things that really just irk me when it comes to them. You know, Chuck Todd this past weekend on Meet the Press used language that I just hate. I mean, I would encourage everybody to just never use the words left, right, or center.
Okay.
Because that is inherently marginalizing, right? People picture a bell curve and the center of the country is in the center of the political spectrum, and anybody on the left is out on the fringe, right? That's language they use to trap us. And nobody does it intentionally if they use it on our side. It's just, you know, we were kind of trained to speak this language, and sometimes I have to catch myself. But when you look at the polling of general election voters, and 75% want to expand Social Security benefits, and only 15% want to cut them, or 71% want debt-free college, or a huge majority want Medicare for All or Green New Deal, where is the center of the country? Is it in what people think of as the political center? No. Progressivism is the center of the country, right? So Chuck Todd, you know, talks about left versus center, and, you know, people like Warren and Bernie are pulling the party to the left, which sounds like he's creating a choice between taking on really popular positions that we know versus being electable.
Right.
And that crushes us, because even within our own membership, you know, at boldprogressives.org, we have nearly 1 million members. When we've been doing surveying for weeks and months, the number one thing people want is to defeat Donald Trump. I would grant that point. And our point is, after Donald Trump ran, railing against Wall Street speeches, railing against corporate trade deals, railing against corruption, he was lying on all those things, but he was tapping into a very real anti-establishmentarianism, right? Very real desire to shake up the system. Who's going to do that? Joe Biden?
No. Sorry, no.
Amy Klobuchar?
No.
Or Bernie and Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So if we want to win back the center of the country, we need someone who's bold and speaking to where they are. But this left-right thing really... So anyway, honestly, just like the whole narrative on TV to answer, and I'm being very verbose, but it's like...
That's okay.
Yeah, it's really a problem. It's really... The conventional wisdom is a problem. That's why it's great that people like you exist.
Right. Thank you. And yeah, and they insist on using terms like leftists. Excuse me. The only thing worse than leftist is socialist smears. Bernie Sanders identifies as a Democratic socialist. He caucuses with the Democrats, and in fact, the Democratic Party in the Senate has him listed as their outreach, I think, director of outreach or something. I mean, he's got assignments within the party. He functions within the party, but they'll use it as an attack. And more often than not, when people are, you know, yelling at me on Twitter, they'll go, but he's not a Democrat and he's a socialist, as if I should care about those two things. Should Adam Green, should I care about those two things?
I think you know the answer to that. It's ridiculous. I mean, yeah, no, you shouldn't. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, back to your media critique, there's this broken conventional wisdom that this growing set of people in this country who identify as independents are somehow in the fake notion of the center, that these are moderates who just want the parties to get along, right? Most of these people are pissed off. They're like, I don't want to associate as a Democrat or as a Republican. The political system is broken. The economy is rigged against me. I don't want to buy into that system. I'm an independent. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean that we should message to them saying Republican and Democratic politicians will get something done by cutting backroom deals on small bore issues? Or should we be promising bold systemic change that shakes up the system, right?
Right.
Like, right. Bernie Sanders, to his credit, gets that people don't exactly love the Democratic Party brand. And
no,
right?
No, they
like,
don't.
That's a badge of honor that he gets that.
That's
not
right.
Uh-huh. His demerit.
Right.
Right. So it's just silly. And the final thing I'll say on this about labels. The biggest reason I hate labels is if you look at a poll, there's always these demographic questions, you know, gender, race. There's always one about, do you identify as liberal, conservative, or moderate? And every single time, liberal caps at about 20%. Right? It's cool to say you're moderate. You sound pragmatic if you're moderate.
Okay.
But in the same poll, 75% will say they want to expand Social Security, and large majorities will want to have Medicare for all. And then people will look at that poll and say, oh, don't embrace expanding Social Security and Medicare for all because that's a liberal position. And look, only 20% of the people are liberal. So they use these labels as a false proxy for issues. When if we just cut to the chase and ask the public about the issues, the center of the country is progressive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I totally agree with you. Like, get rid of the labels. Don't make that your central argument against somebody. Look at whether they're speaking to people's needs, and that's how we defeat Trump in 2020.
Exactly. Hey, what regarding the whole Bernie's not a Democrat label, LOL GOP. I don't know if you follow him on Twitter. It's great. He actually, his name is Jason Sattler, and he's got an op-ed in today's USA Today about Bernie Sanders. And one of the things he says is Bernie Sanders is doing Democrats a favor. He writes, the last thing we want to do is help Trump. So here's how we can make sure we don't destroy the only candidate who can beat him. We're all in this together. To anyone who loves to point out that Bernie is not a Democrat, you are praising the burn, not burning him. He could guarantee Trump's reelection by running as an independent. He's doing you and America a favor. And I think that's a pretty valid point. If he ran as an independent, he would be a spoiler. Instead, he's running as a Democrat. He caucuses with the Democrats, and you know, that's where he should run, so as not to destroy the party. Now, Elizabeth Warren, I don't think she was asked that question. I know Kamala Harris was asked, "Are you a democratic socialist?" And she, "No, I believe in capitalism." Elizabeth Warren is a capitalist as well.
Elizabeth Warren, I'm sorry, keep going.
No, you go ahead. She is a capitalist. I mean, she has a background in that, right?
Yes. I mean, even in assuming that a lot of your listeners are progressive, you know, the word capitalist,
I know,
especially like that, you know, just
an
like corporatist,
connotation. Right.
Can sound right. She wants markets to work correctly for a little guy. She wants someone who's an entrepreneur or who wants to start a small business to not get boxed out by big corporate monopolies. She wants somebody who wants to buy consumer goods for their family to not have it poisoned by big corporations, or to get ripped off by corporations, or people applying for credit cards to not get ripped off because of fine print. Like, she wants, you know, I've taken economics a lot. Like, that was my minor in college and in law school. There's a big economic bent, and like, transparency for consumers and giving them the ability to make real choices with real information is just like the underpinnings of a real market. And part of her point is that today's economy is corrupt. Today's economy is corrupted by big corporate power within the economy, but also as they buy political influence in Washington. So I don't want to, you know, use the word capitalist like that, because I think that speaks past the point that she's making, which is the system is broken, and we don't need a small board tweak here or there. We need big systemic change, so that if people say the word capitalism, they're talking about everyday people, small businesses building capital, not big corporations ripping us off and not paying their taxes.
Gotcha. Adam Green is with us from the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. They're online at boldprogressives.org. While I've got you on the phone, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about the other big issue that we really need to pay attention to in the 2020 elections. Democrats, thank goodness, won back the House in 2018. They need to take back the Senate if we're going to be able to undo any of the damage that Trump has done. How's it looking in the Senate in 2020 for the Democrats?
Yeah, thank you for asking about that, Nicole, and for paying attention to it so early.
It's important.
It is important, and it could be game-changing for you know, what we do if we have power in the White House.
Yep.
We'll see. You know, we have... I think, you know, nominees matter. It matters who gets the nominations in these states. And we've seen numerous attempts know, done in good faith, but apparently wrong by the establishment, to field people for Senate in various races that were either explicitly conservative or just very old school. You know, Phil Bredesen, supposedly the most popular Democrat in Tennessee,
yeah,
I think in his 70s, former governor, you know, he got trounced,
yes,
in the last Senate election.
Yep.
Ted Strickland, the former governor of Ohio,
right,
got trounced when they brought him back out. No, honestly, I think that these also argue for not bringing back Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
Like old war horses generally don't sell with the voters. but, you know, we have the opportunity in 2020, where we need to pick up probably three seats, hopefully more, to have Stacey Abrams on the ballot. Ooh. In Georgia.
In Georgia, yeah.
Have hopefully Ruben Gallego on the ballot
in Arizona. In
Arizona, mm-hmm. Congressman.
Yep.
You know, possibly Beto runs again against John Cornyn and beats him in,
yep,
Texas.
That'd be great.
And J.D. Shulton.
In Ohio.
Who almost beat Steve King. He's thinking about running in
Iowa. Iowa, right.
What an amazing quadfecta that would be, to have those four inspiring progressives that we can rally around. If there's others too, awesome. But I'm hoping that, you know, that the establishment does not try to squash them and instead embraces the fact that that's the right way to win in some of these states.
Right. We got to look at the big picture. The one last thing is, you know, already the discourse on social media is getting really ugly. Again, I blame media outlets like MSNBC, who insisted on every segment they did on Bernie Sanders today, they had to have a Hillary person on to reignite the old battles. I don't understand it. We need to resist that stuff. I think we all have our favorites at this point, as I was saying earlier. I'm kind of with you. I'm Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders. I'll take either one or both of them, although I think both of them would be not the smartest, because they're both getting on up there in age, but they're my two favorites. And as far as bad-mouthing other candidates, I think I will, you know, I'm always going to speak my mind. It's what I do. And say that Amy Klobuchar is too conservative for me. And unfortunately, I think Sherrod Brown is going in that direction as well, probably sees an opening in the field. But we need to keep our eye on the big prize, which is, yeah, we want to get our preferred candidate in office. But most importantly, we got to get Donald Trump the hell out of there.
Absolutely. And I think that the broken conventional wisdom, including the broken media narrative, is in part responsible for people like Sherrod Brown or Amy Klobuchar taking positions or saying things that you might disagree with, right? Like Amy Klobuchar, when she talks about her ability to get things done with Republicans, the question I would ask is, do we want D.C. bipartisanship or do we want Main Street bipartisanship?
Hmm.
Going back to polling, I remember during the height of the healthcare debate, the New York Times poll showed that 50% of Republican voters favored a public option to compete with private insurance. And precisely zero Republican members of Congress were advocating or supporting that position. So what does it mean to have D.C. bipartisanship in that environment? Why do independents hate the political system and not want to associate with anybody? Because the system is broken. In this case, Republican politicians don't even represent Republican constituents. And we have Democratic politicians promising to negotiate and cut deals with out-of-touch Republican politicians. It makes no sense. If Amy Klobuchar wanted to truly be bipartisan, she would look at the polls and say, Republican grandparents and Democratic grandparents want to expand Social Security benefits,
mm-hmm,
and want Medicare for all.
That's right.
And want to create tens of millions of jobs with the Green New Deal. And then she would work to bring voters together, not politicians. So, again, I partly blame the media narrative and false notions of what's centrism, what is electability.
Yep.
And, you know, Sherrod Brown, I hope he campaigns more as a populist than.
Well, I hope he does too, but he's already, you know, poo-pooing Medicare for all. And, you know, he's trying to be the centrist. He and Amy Klobuchar, I think they've staked out that middle territory. And I don't know what to make of it. I think it's pandering to the audience because I actually think Sherrod Brown is more progressive than that. But what do I know? Adam Green.
Wait, real quick.
Yeah.
I caught myself. I just said centrist. You said centrist.
Yes.
Let's call it more conservative.
Yes.
They're trying to campaign more conservatively. They are not the center. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie
are the center
of the country.
I agree. And can we stop using the term moderate as well? You calling Joe Manchin a moderate Democrat is bullshit. He's a conservative Democrat. He's a conservadem. He's not even, I wouldn't even put the word Democrat on him. He's a conservadem. And I got to say, watch out for Kyrsten Sinema, too. She's a scary one. And she was Chuck Schumer's pick. Go figure. Anyway, it's an exciting time. Are you dreading or looking forward to the next 23 months?
Both at the same time. I would be a lot. I'd be dreading it more if we had lost in 2018. The fact that we won shows that hard work pays off. So I'm excited to get some stuff done.
Absolutely. All right, Adam Green, please send my regards to Stephanie Taylor. You guys, the co-founders of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, they are online at boldprogressives.org, doing a great job, really behind Elizabeth Warren, but they take Bernie Sanders in a heartbeat and pushing for the most progressive outcome we could get. And I thank you for that. I'm glad you're still going strong after 10 years.
Ditto. Thanks for being such a strong voice.
Thank you so much. Bye, Adam. Take care. Bye-bye. All right, Adam Green from the Progressive Change Campaign Committee. He used to come on my show a lot, and back in the Air America days, yeah, we're going back 10 years now, when they were, you know, they were brand new organizations, so I guess it was easier to get them. But they've been fighting the good fight for a long time. And again, I do have some of that 4 year ago swag from Netroots Nation with the Ready for Warren stickers. I'll have to find them somewhere. Anyway. I know, again, last week I was a little down on some of the guests, even after warning people to stop bad-mouthing the other candidates. And it's advice I'm going to have to keep reminding myself to take, because it's easy for me to poo-poo Amy Klobuchar after watching her poo-pooing Medicare for All or free college tuition at state colleges and universities. She is, you know, she needs to listen to Stephanie Kelton on modern monetary theory to understand how we pay for things, because she doesn't get it. I'm sick of the media elite, to use that term, trying to scare us into going to the path of least resistance, the most conservative among them. What they need to do is stop focusing on the horse race, which is all they seem to cover, and focus on the issues. That's why I guess it's nice that, you know, CNN does these the town halls. They're going to do one with Bernie Sanders on Monday. Unfortunately, Wolf Blitzer is going to moderate it. Go figure. Between Bernie's delivery and Blitz, oh God, talk about a snooze fest. But I love Bernie, so I'll watch. But you know, when you watch the things like I watch today, when they're like, Bernie Sanders raised $6 million in 24 hours, is he now the front runner? And we'll find out when we come back. And then they have on a Hillary Clinton mouthpiece and some guy who's a progressive, not connected at all to Bernie Sanders. That's just bullshit. That's just MSBS putting their finger on the scale again against Bernie Sanders. I wasn't around then. I honestly didn't know Ed Schultz well. When I met him, he was a dick to me. So there was no love lost between us. I was not a fan of his. But the word is that he was fired from MSNBC because he wanted to cover Bernie Sanders and MSNBC didn't want him to. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but it is Comcast. And Comcast has their own, agenda. And their own agenda is to take as much money as they can get from the fossil fuel industry and the Koch brothers and other corporate entities who would not be well served in terms of them broadening their massive acquisition of wealth under a Bernie Sanders or an Elizabeth Warren presidency. Just saying. All right, we still have what's news to get to. You know what? Let's just launch into it. We'll
do it live.
Okay.
Fucking thing.
We'll do it live.
Fuck it. I read the news today. Oh, boy. It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, we'll start with some new news that happened throughout the day today since I recorded the recorded version of What's News earlier this morning. Department of Justice sources are claiming that the Mueller report will be given to the new Attorney General, Bill Barr, as early as next week, and that Barr will give the summary to Congress shortly thereafter. Now, there's a lot of questions inherent in that statement. One is, Mueller's wrapping up his investigation already. There are some coverage that say, I heard one journalist saying they've been staking out the grand jury room for weeks now, and since the Roger Stone action, it's been dead, and that Mueller has been working on this report for weeks. So the fact that that Barr is in and Mueller is allegedly going to deliver the report as early as next week are not necessarily related. That he could have been wrapping it up already, but we'll see. It looks like we're getting close to something. And thank goodness, once again, that the Democrats control the House of Representatives, and hopefully they can force the release of the entire report. There's that. Big Supreme Court news today. In a unanimous ruling, the court moved to limit state and local government's power to impose fines and seize property. They ruled in favor of a guy named Tyson Timms of Marion, Indiana, whose $42,000 Land Rover SUV was seized after his arrest for selling a couple hundred dollars worth of heroin. Timms drew wide support from civil liberties organizations that want to limit civil forfeitures, which they say empower localities and law enforcement to seize property of someone suspected of a crime as a revenue stream. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's back on the bench, wrote the opinion for the court, agreeing with Timms that the Eighth Amendment's excessive fines clause applies to state and local governments. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote the opinion, which was agreed upon unanimously. That doesn't happen much these days. Donald Trump felt compelled this morning to tweet, quote, The New York Times reporting is false. They are a true enemy of the people. It's all caps, so that's how I envision him yelling in caps. Enemy of the people. It's the Adderall speaking. He's such an ass. CNN is reporting that the Justice Department is preparing to... I already said that. The Mueller investigation. Okay. In other news, the New York Times last night broke another huge story, this time reporting that Trump, late last year, asked then-Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker to put one of Trump's allies in charge of the Michael Cohen investigation, which, of course, is led by the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York. The Times said there's no evidence that Whitaker acted on this alleged request. And, of course, Trump denied the report when asked about it by a reporter. NBC News has that story, and it is fucked up.
President Trump tonight is denying the explosive New York Times report that says late last year he tried to put his own appointee in charge of the investigation into those hush money payments during the 2016 campaign.
I don't know who gave you that. That's more fake news. There's a lot of fake news out there. No, I didn't.
The Times reports the president called Matthew Whitaker, then his hand-picked acting attorney general, to ask whether U.S. Attorney Jeffrey Berman could be put in charge of the widening investigation into his former personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, according to several unnamed American officials. Berman had already been recused from the case. Just this month, Whitaker said this to Congress about presidential interference.
At no time has the White House asked for, nor have I provided, any promises or commitments concerning the special counsel's investigation or any other investigation.
It follows new revelations from fired acting FBI Director Andrew McCabe, who now says he briefed lawmakers after the FBI opened an investigation into President Trump in 2017. McCabe telling Savannah Guthrie that no one pushed back.
Did you tell Congress?
And I told Congress what we had done.
Did anyone object?
That's the important part here, Savannah. No one objected, not on legal grounds, not on constitutional grounds, and not based on the facts.
That answer, an apparent rebuttal to Republican criticism that top Justice Department and FBI officials were plotting an administrative coup.
Did you suspect the president might actually be working for Russia?
We thought that might be possible, yes.
The president overnight on Twitter accusing McCabe of treason.
I don't think really anybody takes those tweets by the president very seriously. I certainly don't at this point.
McCabe was fired from the FBI last year, accused of lying under oath about his interactions with the media.
There you go. The NBC News report on that story. Now, McCabe, of course, is on a book tour for his new book entitled The Threat. He's been making the rounds. It's hard to miss him. But one of the statements he made that stood out was this last night on CNN.
The fact is, I, like all the men and women in the FBI, people across government and the military, I did my job. I stood up to the obligations of my office. When we're presented with facts, we made hard decisions, decisions that we knew would be tough on the organization, would be tough on us personally. Look what I've gone through as a result of those decisions. But we did them anyway because we were committed to our responsibilities and serving this country.
Do you still believe the president could be a Russian asset?
I think it's possible. I think that's why we started our investigation. And I'm really anxious to see where Director Mueller concludes that.
You know, McCabe actually was on Stephen Colbert last night. Talk about making the rounds. Well, this was part of their conversation.
Lindsey Graham has called this he wants to investigate a potential coup. How coup-y did it feel to you in the moment? I mean, it's a constitutional coup in a way, but it's a coup.
I think, in Lindsey Graham's
opinion.
I think that's a contradiction in and of itself, right?
Constitutional coup?
Yeah. I mean, it was not
like
very...
Like jumbo shrimp or something like that?
It was not very coup-y.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it was a mention in the midst of a wide-ranging conversation. I'm not aware that Rod ever took any efforts to pursue that. I'm not aware of any meetings about it or other discussions on it. It was, for me, really just an indicator of just how frenzied and fraught the situation was that we were in, and those were the kind of things that were bouncing around.
Let's get to the Mueller probe for just a moment here. Is there anything in the last 2 years that makes you less suspicious of the president or is less indicative that he had an improper relationship with the Russians, possible collusion or conspiracy?
No.
No. That's the answer. Is there anything that makes you less suspicious? Colbert asked McCabe. And he says no. Stay tuned. There's more coming here. That's a book that, you know, is on my list of ones to read if it wouldn't, you know, stress me out too much. More trouble in paradise. Elaine Chao, you know her. She's Donald Trump's Secretary of Transportation. She's also married to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Well, it's now being reported that Elaine Chao has met at least 10 times with Kentucky business leaders or politicians after email requests made by her husband, the aforementioned Mitch McConnell, were unveiled. A cache of more than 800 emails obtained under the Freedom of Information Act by the watchdog group American Oversight shows that some of those meetings led to McConnell's associates being granted their wishes by the powerful transportation secretary, from infrastructure grants to highway project funding. Both offices told Politico that it was normal for cabinet members and the Senate majority leader to work together. Austin Evers, the founder of American Oversight, said the emails show that, quote, Secretary Chao built a political operation in her office to favor Kentucky. Funny how that works, isn't it? But nepotism seems to be a requirement in the Trump administration. All right. Speaking about Bernie Sanders, I mentioned in the first 24 hours of his campaign, over 223,000 people, individuals, contributed $5,925,771. The average donation was once again $27. Meanwhile, all the anti-Bernie vitriol you've been seeing on social media may be just what you're thinking they might be. Foreign state actors. Politico's reporting that a wide-ranging disinformation campaign aimed at Democratic 2020 candidates is already underway on social media, with signs that foreign state actors are driving at least some of the activity. The main targets appear to be Senator Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Beto O'Rourke, and Senator Bernie Sanders, four of the most prominent announced or prospective candidates for president. What else? Oh, and, you know, God, this story. Remember the high school kid from Covington, Kentucky, that went on a school field trip to D.C. and instigated a confrontation with a Native American man at the Lincoln Memorial? Well, that kid, whose name I'm not going to say because I don't want to elevate his celebrity any more than it already is, that kid, or I should say his family and their lawyers, have filed a lawsuit seeking $250 million from the Washington Post in damages, claiming that the newspaper falsely accused him of racist acts and instigating the confrontation. Give me a fucking break. In a statement, the boy's Atlanta-based lawyer said additional lawsuits would be filed in the weeks ahead. So they're going to go after other people in addition to the Washington Post as well. Ew. God, and that's what's wrong with America. Just saying. All right, we've got a few minutes left, and I've actually got two pieces. You know, phone lines are open should you want to weigh in on the Bernie Sanders versus everybody or everybody versus Bernie issue on Elizabeth Warren. Yeah, feel free. In the meantime, there's two things I have to share with you. You know what, since we've been talking about Bernie and I read a little piece of it before, let me share the rest of this. Again, I mentioned LOLGOP on Twitter, who's one of my favorite Twitter follows. His actual name is Jason Sattler, and he's a writer based in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and he's a member of the USA Today Board of Contributors, and occasionally he has an op-ed in USA Today that I just happened to catch today, and as are his tweets. The editorial is pretty perfect, so let me share it with you. Here's what he writes. There's only one person who can beat Donald Trump, whoever the Democrats nominate for president in 2020. That's how it starts. Just so you get it. Senator Bernie Sanders knows this. That's why he has announced that he's seeking the Democratic nomination for the second time, though he remains an independent. For many devoted Sanders supporters, there are no other candidates. That's what Roseanne DeMauro, head of National Nurses United, which backed Sanders in 2016, told the Washington Post last year. Sanders has already won the battle to reground Democratic policies toward the left, even if his endorsed candidates haven't been as successful winning over people or red seats. His supporters also have some valid grievances about how the 2016 Democratic primary was shaped to benefit Hillary Clinton, creating an animosity that led Sanders to wait until the Democratic National Convention to endorse her. Some of his fiercest backers never ended up with her, preferring the revolution instead. We've seen the revolution. Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court. More than 14,000 kids in camps on the border, hundreds likely orphaned. Thousands left to die in Puerto Rico. More than $1 trillion in tax cuts targeted to benefit the rich and corporations. Shameless efforts to bury climate science and reverse a decade of gains for LGBTQ Americans. Sanders' diehards can blame this disaster on the Democratic establishment because Bernie would have won. And Clinton supporters can blame Sanders backers for demonizing the nation's first female major party presidential nominee and helping Trump slip through the Electoral College. Who was right? Who knows? We do know that the massive rot that allowed Donald Trump to become president did not grow in one primary season. And we do know that beef between Sanders and Clinton supporters has largely been overblown. Even after the bruising 2016 election, most Democrats and Democrat leaners both liked both candidates. In fact, I'm going to stick an aside in here, and this is something that I've been pushing and will continue to promote and tweet out as often as need be because people don't seem to get the message. But the fact is that in 2016, only 12% of Bernie Sanders supporters ended up voting for Trump, while in 2008, 25% of Hillary Clinton supporters voted for John McCain. More Bernie supporters voted for Hillary in 2016 than Obama supporters voted for Hillary in 2008. Hillary supporters voted for Obama in 2008. My brain is fried at this point. You get what I'm saying. Quit trying to blame it on the Bernie Sanders people. Back to LOLGOP. He continues, we can also guess the Trump and GOP plan for 2020 if he survives until then. It will look a lot like 2016. Suppress votes, hype up third-party candidates so Trump can win, and even less than the 46.1% of the vote he got in 2016. And most important, destroy the Democratic candidate, likely with the help of foreign powers and the news media, by accusing her or him of being as corrupt and compromised as Donald Trump. This is the gaslighting that they're so good at. Again, my words, not his. LOL GOP continues with the passage that I read to you before, where he wrote, the last thing we want to do is help Trump. So here's how we can make sure we don't destroy the only candidate who can beat him. Again, any Democrat that runs against him is the only candidate that can beat him. He continues, we're all in this together. To anyone who loves to point out that Bernie is not a Democrat, you're praising the burn, not burning him. He could guarantee Trump's reelection by running as an independent. He's doing you and America a favor. And then he suggests, save your fury for Trump. The lesson of the 2016 GOP primary is that in a field of more than a dozen candidates, anyone can win. So look out for the billionaires. Favor attacks on policy over assaults on character. Let me read that line again. Favor attacks on policy over assaults on character. You guys in the chat room are too funny. I can't look because you're distracting me and you're being very kind. I need the glasses to read. if not for reading, I could go without the glasses. Anyway, the lesson of, let's see. It's fair to call out a candidate's record as a prosecutor, for instance, but avoid the trap of playing up disinformation like, say, if a candidate was honest about when she listened to Snoop and Tupac. Get it? Candidates should take it upon themselves to continually remind their supporters and everyone else, the Democrats' nominee. This is what happens when I do it live, damn it. Candidates should take it upon themselves to continually remind their supporters and everyone that anyone the Democrats nominate is going to be a giant compared with the current president or his doting vice president. And this one. No candidate, not even yours, is perfect. One of the most effective attacks on Clinton was that as First Lady, she championed the 1994 crime bill that helped skyrocket incarceration. But the bizarre thing was that Bernie Sanders voted for the bill as a House member and Clinton couldn't vote on it at all. Remember that redistricting is the ball game. No politician is without sin. Try to take a candidate's evolution as a good thing and not a sign of being contrived and opportunistic, even if the candidate is a woman. Ooh, healthcare can be your litmus test. It's a good thing the healthcare debate on the left is largely over whether we should just expand Medicare or make sure everyone has it. Meanwhile, Republican policies have already left 7 million more Americans uninsured, Gallup has found, and the administration is backing a lawsuit that could terminate Obamacare and could easily win, especially if Trump gets another Supreme Court pick. Yeah, see, this is what, again, this is the big picture, people. This is what the ball we need to keep our eyes on because anything is possible. Make maximalist demands. Make sure your candidate backs the plan you want and then get that candidate nominated. If it doesn't work, you can do something far more important, and that is to remember that 2020 is a redistricting election. You'll be voting during a census year that will bring new electoral maps in 2022. If you don't get the nominee you love, don't despair. Vote for the Democratic nominee, the only person that can beat Trump, and then go down ballot. Help kick Republicans out of as many state legislative seats as possible so another decade won't be gerrymandered away. I can't say that often enough. Again, go down ballot. You vote for the Democrat, even if you've got to hold your nose like so many of us did in 2016. I did. I voted for Hillary Clinton, the last person I wanted to vote for, but I did. And then I went down ballot and voted for the Democrats all the way down the ballot. That's what we've got to do. We know this for sure is how he wraps this up. Donald Trump will refuse to admit defeat. That's why it's our job to crush him beyond a reasonable doubt and not crush each other. Again, those are the words of LOLGOP. That's his Twitter handle. His real name is Jason Sattler. That's an op-ed he wrote that appears in today's edition of USA Today I will, because it's so important, I will post it on the blog today at NicoleSandler.com along with today's podcast. Free to everybody. Of course, we live by your donations. So if you can, if you can afford it, please stop by the donate page at NicoleSandler.com. Tomorrow happens to be Thursday. That's the day Howie Klein is here. If you're not familiar with Down With Tyranny, check out downwithtyranny.com. Howie Klein also runs the Blue America Pack and helps find the best progressive candidates and then raises money for them. It's all about policy. It's not about personality. It's not about appearance. It's not about age or gender. It's about policy, which, sorry, is how we should be voting. All right, with that, we're done for the day. Ruben Michaels, thank you in the YouTube chat room for that donation. I always appreciate it. Until tomorrow, thanks everyone for listening, and go Bernie. Go Elizabeth.